Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Our first guest has written a book about a summer canoe trip and what it showed him about Wisconsin and its people. With us by phone today, John Hildebrand, University of Wisconsin Eau Claire Professor of English and author. We've had him on a number of times. We'll talk with him about his latest book. It's called Long Way Round, Through the Heartland by River. So as we visit with him, think about your own journeys. Has a journey like John's changed your perspective? What do Wisconsin waterways mean to you? John Hildebrand, thank you very much for joining us today.
Well, it's a pleasure. It's nice to talk to you again.
Yeah, good to talk with you again, too. And I have to tell you right up front, I really enjoyed your book. It was such an interesting read for me, a guy who's had a lot of sociology classes, has done a lot of research on Wisconsin communities. It was fun to read not only about the rivers that you canoed on, but also the people along those rivers in those small communities and towns. And you talk right away in your first chapter, you talk about the idea of the round river. And that's, I think, a good place to start. Maybe explain that concept and how it relates to our state.
Yeah, so, you know, the motif of the book is, you know, I'm on a round river. I'm going around the state, and the round river is it comes from a tall tale by about Paul Bunyan, who you know takes his raft of logs down the round river, and days go by, and eventually he realizes, you know, this river runs in a circle. And, you know, it's so essentially it's sort of a joke. The story is kind of a joke. And then in the, I don't know, 30s or 40s, Aldo Leopold resurrects that myth in an essay called The Round River, only he uses the river as a metaphor for ecology, the notion that everything's sort of tied together and what goes around comes around. And it got me thinking, because I live in Eau Claire and I'm not very far from the Chippewa River, that it would be possible to construct your own round river. If you went down some rivers and you went up others, you could very nearly circumnavigate Wisconsin. And so that's what I decided to do one summer.
Yeah, it's really interesting. So, were you hoping to find something on this trip?
Yeah, well,
prompted you?
So, I mean, I've lived in the state for almost 40 years, and yet I felt like I'd gotten out of touch. So I thought I need to relearn where I live. And I thought, you know, the best way to do that, instead of going around by a car where you just drive through places, I would go through the state by river. And, you know, those were the original highways, and most towns got their start somewhere by a river. So that was my idea. It wasn't to get away from it at all. In fact, it was to kind of reacquaint myself.
Yeah. And you had something like 800 miles, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, about 800 miles. And, you know, I'd done a trip like this years ago. My first book is about the Yukon River. Mm-hmm. And it was sort of, in some ways, the kind of same impulse. I want to learn about the people living along the river. Well, in that case, it was, you know, mainly people living in native villages. And I then, you know, 30 years goes by, whatever. And I think, you know, I don't even know my home state that well, and I could do the same thing. I could just get in a boat and see what happens, who I meet, where I end up. And so, you know, there was a lot of serendipity involved in this.
Yeah. And the rivers, just to give people an idea, I think you started on the Chippewa River.
Right.
And from there?
Okay. Well,
the Mississippi?
So, go down the Chippewa. That took me a couple of days. Down the Chippewa, turn left at the Mississippi, go down the Mississippi, take another left just down from Prairie du Chien, and go up the Wisconsin. And I went up as far as Portage, and I actually went a little further than Portage. I ended up visiting two places. One was Leopold's Cabin.
Yeah.
In some ways, sort of the wellspring of the Round River. And it's sort of polar opposite, which is Wisconsin Dells.
Yeah.
Then I went on the Fox River, and I headed east to Oshkosh. Then and very different landscape on these rivers. And then I got a very long car portage to the Bad River, which runs mainly through the Bad River Chippewa Reservation, and I spent quite a bit of time there. And then up the Brule River, now I'm heading south, so up the Brule River, and I can tell you, this is a really stupid idea, try to go up the Brule River.
Up that one, yeah.
Yeah, so the other rivers I had, you know, I'm in a square stern canoe with a little six-horse outboard. And outboards are not allowed or wouldn't work anyway. So I thought, you know, I'll pole up the river. You know, about a mile later, I realized this isn't going to work. So I started paddling. And the current was so fast I couldn't paddle. In the end, I just, you know, got out of the boat and lined it up river, you know, and kayakers would go by. And one of them said, are you, you know, bleeping nuts? You know? And it was sort of right. You know, so after about 10 miles of wading up the river, I got a ride to the end of the river. I paddled up till the river essentially disappeared at its headwaters, and then I portaged 2 miles with the canoe into the headwaters of St. Croix, down the St. Croix River, back into the Mississippi, across Lake Pepin, and then back up the Chippewa.
Oh man, what a ride!
It was fun, you know. Oh,
it had to be fun, mm-hmm. And you know, I loved the fact that you everywhere you stop, there's a little history involved. Sometimes it's the history of the town you're in,
yeah,
or something that happened in the area that may or may not have just related directly to that town. But the people that you met, to me, were so much. It was so much fun to and interesting for me to learn about the various people you met.
Yeah, I mean, I think about, you know, what makes a place or a landscape special. And it really isn't, you know, scenery. It's people and it's history. And I learned that, you know, writing my second book, which is about a family farm. You know, I mean, how interesting is a field of soybeans or corn? It's not the field, it's the people. And it's their history. And, you know, the same is true anywhere. And so when I would come to a, you know, small town, I was interested in the history of that town and also in the, you know, the people that I might meet and how maybe sometimes that history intersects with the present.
Yeah. And, you know, there's right off the bat or nearly right off the bat, you talk about one stretch of, I think it was the Chippewa River that was labeled the road of war?
Yeah, so, you know, one of the things that I think we're remiss in this country about is Indian history that predates us. Mm-hmm. And because very often there's no concrete sign, there's no, you know, monuments, there's no, you know, town site, you know, we think, you know, we go through an area and we think, oh, wilderness, you know, where no man has ever been. Well, that's almost never the case. You know, so all of this land have been, you know, tribal land, one tribe or another. And they had their own history before ours intersected with them. And so, you know, there's a wonderful book called The History of the Ojibwe People by William Warren. And Warren was, I think, the grandson of a chief, a Chippewa chief. And he's saying, you know, this area in the lower Chippewa River, there was constant warfare between the Sioux and the Chippewa. And as a matter of fact, I ended up camped, I think, the second night at the head of Battle Island. Well, there's a reason they called it Battle Island.
Oh, man. And you talk at that point, too, you talk about a guy who was a friend of yours, Joe
Bijan.
Yes.
Well, so we had, you know, there always seems to be tension between groups, and we think about that now, and we don't realize it's been going on a long time. You know, so there, you know, it's funny, there's this anti-immigrant attitude in parts of the state, and it's largely directed at Hispanic folks. I remember when it was directed at the Hmong. They showed up here in the early 1980s in Eau Claire and elsewhere, and people didn't know anything about them. Who are they? Why are they here? Well, you know, they were here largely because they had allied themselves with us in a losing war. And when we pulled out of Vietnam, we kind of left them high and dry, and some of them made it here. And one of them was Joe Bijan. And so, you know, I wanted to write about this years ago, so I kind of got myself invited on Joe Bijan's deer hunt on the opening weekend. And if you know, I mean, if you know deer hunters,
yeah,
that's like being, you know, inviting yourself to somebody's wedding.
Yep.
He was very gracious, and we got along. I actually got a deer. And then we did some other trips together, and one of them was duck hunting. And we camped right at that spot on Battle Island. And, you know, when I was there on this trip, he had already passed away. He had a very premature heart attack, and he died. But, you know, I was, you know, it's hard not to think about him being there, where yeah, we had camped and gone duck hunting.
And he had wound up in a position of authority in there, where in Eau Claire.
He was elected twice to the Eau Claire City Council. I think he was the first Hmong person to be elected at a municipal position in the country. And here's the thing. Back then, nobody cared whether he was a Republican or a Democrat.
Yeah.
You know, I worked on his committee, and I didn't know. Yeah, I suppose now I'd ask, hey, what are you? He was a good guy. And when you, you know, when you go hunting with somebody, you go out in the woods, and in some ways you see how somebody acts, who would be a good leader and who would not. And I thought he would be a very good leader.
Yeah, absolutely. John Hildebrand, our guest today. We're talking with him about his latest book. It's called Long Way Round, Through the Heartland by River. I'm Larry Mueller. Tyler Ditter, our engineer today, Jill Nadeau, our producer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, John Hildebrand, author of Long Way Round, Through the Heartland by River. A great book. It's published by Wisconsin Historical Society Press. Well, you got yourself drifted into the Mississippi River and down to, I think, Wabasha before you had some breakdown problems.
Yeah. So a friend of mine, Bob Elkins, who really made this trip possible. I mean, he lent me a canoe. Well, he'd done some repair work. It was a used canoe, and it had done some repair work and got the gunwales a little too close together, and the tension popped two of the ribs, and boy, I was worried about the canoe splitting apart once I hit the Mississippi.
And so he brought you a new one.
He brought me another one. and that was a great one. It's also used, and that one leaked. So then I had to go to Alma to get it to a marina and
pinged.
Get it pinged. Yeah. Which is to have the rivets hit with a ball peen hammer and made flush again.
You know, you use that. You stop at a hotel in Alma, and you use that as a time to reflect on people from communities like Alma. There's some research done on people who leavers, stayers, and returners.
Yeah, and that's a good way to look at it. You know, there's this huge, movement going on in the country as a whole, and what it is the depopulation of rural areas. And I grew up outside of Detroit, and there have been any number of articles about the abandonment of Detroit, one of our major cities, but not enough written, I think, about the depopulation of small towns. And the people I met on the river, and especially in Alma, with some of the best folks that I've met, and Kenny Solway, who used to be a trapper and is also an author, and Jerry Schreiber, who she and her husband own the Alma Hotel, and she grew up in Alma, and she talked about this town, which is beautiful place to visit, but she said this town used to be self-sufficient. It had everything it needed, grocery stores and pharmacies, and 13 bars and barber shop, a shoe store, and what's happened is that a lot of those basic services have been lost, and it makes it harder for people. Jerry and also Kenny, I think, are examples of returners, people who went out in the world, got some skills, and then came back to their hometowns and brought those skills with them and are, kind of keeping things going.
Yeah, and then there are people who never left.
Yeah.
And people who can't wait to get out of town sometimes.
That's right. I think there's a flip side of this thing that maybe people don't think about. I think about it because, I'm a parent with grown children. And as our children are all kind of heading to big cities, well, it's very expensive to live in those cities. They'll never be able to afford, at least my kids, to own a home in those cities. We're packing some places, and we're letting other places sort of wither. And one of the things that it's kind of a obvious observation, but one of the things I realized on the trip is, geez, these small towns are getting smaller, and it would be nice to see more investment in those towns instead of we don't need a Foxconn to build up southeast Wisconsin, between Milwaukee and Chicago. There's plenty there. But what we need investment in is the other areas, the rural areas.
Yeah. Jeff in Sparta emailed in 1988. He was stationed in the U.S. Army. He had the opportunity to attend the U.S. Army Inland Waterways course in Fort Greely, Alaska, and they navigated both the Yukon and the Tanana rivers for about 800 miles on riverboats. It was not a canoe, but it was the best time he ever had. Talked about seeing things and people you never thought you would experience. It was real eye-opening.
Well, what I'd like to say to him is, having been on both the Tanana and the Yukon, is, hey, we've got rivers that are a match for those. And if you go on them, not necessarily to get away, but to see, you know, people and places, you're going to have an eye-opening experience as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's take a couple of calls here. Dwayne in Weston will give you a chance. Hi, Dwayne.
Hi. I grew up in the Scouts program down on the Wisconsin border by Dubuque on the Mississippi, and that was a big part of, you know, being scouting was learning, you know, the canoeing and how to go out in the lake and swamp the canoe and get it back right up and get back in. And some of our best trips to Canada were when we leave the big boat back at the cabin and drag canoes into these remote lakes. And, you know, the fish never knew what hit them. I mean, they're just so quiet and stealthy. No electronics, no trolling motors. But we've canoed the Flambeau and the Wolf and the Peshtigo in Wisconsin, and you just can't beat it, you know, for being in your own backyard in Wisconsin. And one last thing, in Scouts, we had we'd sing around the campfire, if you don't mind my bad voice. It was our paddle, swift and bright, shining like silver, swift as a wild goose flies, dip, dip, and swing. And it was a canoe song we'd sing around the campfire at night, you know. But best memories of being out on the water in a canoe.
Oh, Dwayne, thank you so much. John, a comment?
As an old scout myself, 3 years of Tenderfoot, that's what got me introduced to canoeing. I was on a scout trip, and we did the Osaba River in Michigan. And it just sort of opened things up to me. And, you know, most of us live not too far from a river, and, you know, maybe we feel a little uncomfortable about the idea, gee, what happens if I put a boat in and just let go? Well, you can do it for, you know, check to make sure you're not going to run into a hydroelectric dam. But for the most part, you know, those original blue highways, they're still there.
You tell a kind of a funny story on yourself, John, where somebody asked you, I can't remember where it was. Maybe it was at one of those lock and dams where you were going.
Yeah, and just so I know the story you're talking about. So I'm leaving Alma now, and I'm going through my first lock and dam, and a little intimidated by it. And I get in, you know, I actually had a little marine radio, so I, you know, announced my presence, and by God, the miter gates open, and it's just me, and I go into this huge lock chamber. It's about the size of two football fields. And, you know, a tan face leans over above me and says, hey, you want a rope to hold on to? And he threw me a rope, and I held on to it. And then we had a little conversation, and I asked him, do you get many canoes? And he said, yeah, you know, every summer we get a couple. And I was very, very proud of myself for, you know, doing this big trip. And the guy said, but most of those people paddle their canoes. They don't have a little six horse. Oh, really? Yeah, as a matter of fact, you know, there's a former Navy SEAL, and he's going to swim the Mississippi from the start to the finish this summer. And at that point, I thought, you know, I'm going to rename my boat, you know, the SS Cream Puff, and keep my mouth shut.
That's a great story. Oh, man. Mike in Pewaukee, let's give you a chance. Hi, Mike.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I just wanted to mention a trip that I took, a canoe trip going in a circle in the Everglades. We circled Cape Sable on the west side of Florida. We did about 60 miles over 5 days, sleeping out on chickies that are platforms built above the water in the national park.
Well, that sounds like a great experience. My friend Bob Elkins did that once, and I've always wanted to do that. I guess I'm just scared of the alligators.
We only saw two at the visitor center. We saw a lot more sharks and dolphins.
Wow.
Oh, man. See, now that's a kind of trip. Well, Mike's trip here, your trip, John, those are memories that are never going to go away.
You know, there's something almost mythic about rivers. And I've noticed that when Ken Burns does his documentaries about American history, he almost always has a drone shot of a river valley, usually at sunset. And I think it just strikes a chord with all of us. It's this connection to something bigger.
I would definitely agree with you on that. And Mike, thanks for that story. Appreciate it. There were some, I was below Wabasha. The Mississippi enters a deep gorge there.
Yeah.
And that is a beautiful sight from the water. Well, even from the road, from the top, too.
Yeah, I think I mentioned there's a beautiful oil painting that was done in 1876 by a guy named Alfred Thompson Brichter, I think, of the Mississippi above Winona after a rainstorm. And what's strange is, and I've seen that painting, and the strange thing is when you're on the river in that area, it's like nothing's changed. You know, there are, and you know there are, railroads and highways on both sides, but when you're on the river, you can't see them. You know, you're in this beautiful gorge, and as long as there aren't speedboats bearing down on you, it's really kind of exciting. Beautiful scenery.
And I was really interested. You wrote about how interesting the dams are, how they regulate water. And that was just and I didn't know anything about it. And so it was really fascinating to me.
Yeah, I mean, to me, they are fascinating. I mean, the Mississippi is really an interesting river because, part of it, on the one hand, it's a wildlife refuge, like a 160-mile wildlife refuge. And on the other hand, it's this segmented canal with, with a dam every, 20, 30 miles. And that makes it a working river. So it's very much still a major thoroughfare for commerce. And in a way, as a canoeist, I typically hate dams. But the lock and dam system is so interesting. And it was begun during the Great Depression as a federal works project. It was meant to put people to work, but it was also meant for an economic revival of that area along the river. And so, I mean, here's an example of the government getting involved in a project that would make rural America more self-sufficient, and that's what it did.
Patty in Colfax has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Patty.
Hi, this is Patty from Colfax. I just wanted to mention this about the whole river thing. Two of my three sons and a friend, so there were three young men, they took a 16-foot motorboat, launched it in St. Paul, Minnesota, on the Mississippi River, and they drove that boat to the Gulf of Mexico. They wrecked one prop and had to put a new prop in, but that they broke the one prop, I think it was by Red Wing. And the other prop took them all the way to the Gulf of Mexico, and we have that prop hanging on the wall. Those three young men did that in 10 days.
Well, I'm impressed, especially the fact that they survived all the marinas and all the big boats that you feel like they're going to swamp you. The fact they made it safely speaks volumes.
As Patty was talking, I was thinking about a guy that I once took, a guy from Illinois, and I took him on a muskie fishing trip. So I did a little guide work. And we were fishing, and he was telling me about being on the Mississippi where he loved to fish. And he was out in the boat, in his small boat, small 14-foot, you know, aluminum fishing boat. And the fog came down, and he could not see a thing. And then he had no idea what direction he was in. And then he heard a fog horn from one of the tugs. And it sounded like it was right on top of him. And he said he just blindly put got the boat going and went as fast as he could. And he had no idea what direction he was going. And luckily he hit the shore.
Well, good for him, because in addition to the tugs and speedboats, there's stump fields and wing dams and all kinds of things underwater that you want to avoid.
Oh, man. Who was the most interesting, or what do you think, or was there a group of people that were more interesting, or an individual you found the most interesting on your trip?
Well, I mean, it's like asking you who your best friend is, you know. You don't want to leave anybody out. So, you know, let me mention two people. I really enjoyed Jerry Schreiber. Because she bought this hotel that had been built in 1853. And she said, you know, it was up for sale. And I thought, I can't let this go. I can't let something that's been running since 1853 go back, you know. So she's, you know, a good example of a small town entrepreneur. And then, you know, just about everybody I've met up in Mellon, the mayor of Mellon, Joe Barabi, Mike Wiggins Jr., who's the tribal chair at Bad River, and a fellow named Nick Vanderpie. And the first time I met Nick was actually a couple years ago. He was living in a canvas tent in the middle of the winter of the polar vortex. He was camped in the woods with some other folks, protesting the proposed open pit iron mine. And you know, what I realize is there's tremendous diversity of individuals. You know, if you want to meet some real interesting individual folks, you meet them along the rivers.
You know, I thinking about my own research and things that I've done over the years for the University of Wisconsin, I've done a lot of community development studies, probably 40 or so, where I've worked in a lot of communities, and I've had a chance to sit down with so many people. And I was kind of struck by your comments and your reflections on the people you met who didn't know who you were, essentially, and treated you with so much friendliness and respect.
Well, you know, that was reassuring, and in a way, that's partly why I wanted to make this trip. You know, the politics have been so divisive in Wisconsin, and of course now they're divisive through the whole country, that you feel like, you know, that character in the Buck Owens song who says, "You don't know me, but you don't like me." And, you know, there's some people who wouldn't like me if, you know, they knew I was, you know, a tenured professor. You know, just that would alone would alienate me from them. And yet I found that if I'm alone, I'm an individual, I'm just, you know, traveling, and I need help, or I've got a question, people just were, you know, fell over themselves to be helpful, you know, to take me at face value. And I think that was a lesson for me, was to try to take people at face value and not to prejudge them.
Yeah. And I think you said something, and to hope that you would respond in the same way so many people responded to you.
Yeah. So, I mean, there was one scene, you know, the only enemy that I felt I had on the trip were the people in these huge speedboats. You know, they'd have twin 440 horse diesel engines, and they would pretend not to see me, and they'd leave me wallowing in their wakes. Well, I was coming down the St. Croix near Hudson, and I'm, it's getting dark, and I thought, God, if I don't get off the river, I'm going to get run over. So I ended up camped on an island with all these people with these big power yachts. Mm-hmm. And, again, I don't like them because of their boats. And they welcome me into their group, Hey, can we get you a drink? And, hey, would you like a ride? And, I thought, I didn't like you until I started talking to you,
Yeah. Well, John, you have put together a fascinating book on your travels through on the rivers of Wisconsin, and I certainly highly recommend it. I hope everybody has a chance to read it. Thanks so much for writing it, and thanks so much for taking a few minutes today to talk with us about it.
Well, thanks very much, Larry. It's my pleasure.
John Hildebrand, we talked about a lot of things relating to the book, but there is a whole lot more for you, and I hope you have a chance to read it. It's called Long Way Round, Through the Heartland by River. And again, the author is John Hildebrand. It's published by Wisconsin Society Press. And so copies available everywhere. And I hope you get a chance to talk with him about it. And mark your calendars for March when Chapter a Day will be airing John's book. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network.